Hello and welcome to the final night of Millennial 2020. And I'm now with one of the stars of this season, one of the most hotly anticipated guests this year.
Oh my God, what a letdown!
Well, basically, what do you want me to say? I was going to say, actually, that I, and this is quite sincere, this is quite honest, I think that you are, your channel on YouTube has been the most important channel for people to watch this year. I think that your stuff has been the best that's been made this year. So that is true. That is my honest opinion. So if you're not happy with that, I don't know what I need to say to you.
So anyway, thank you.
Who else could I be talking about but Dave Cullen, aka Computing Forever? So, and this is your first time on Millennial, so welcome to Millennial, Dave.
Thank you very much for having me. And also, I suppose it's the 30th of December, so we should say happy almost new current year to everybody.
Yes, indeed. The terminology gets ever more convoluted. But yeah, it is almost that time. Everyone will be expecting us to talk about... It'd be funny if we actually didn't talk about COVID at all. Talked about trivial stuff.
Let's talk about laptops. Let's talk about Apple. I used to do that stuff.
What's the fastest CPU on sale this year?
I wish I actually knew. I've fallen behind the technical curve. I know nothing now. It's just what used to be technology in this head has just been replaced by politics and social commentary. So there's nothing else.
Well, this year has been incredible in terms of opening up the scope of what is going on. I think this time last year, on the 30th of December last year, we had I don't think anyone had any idea of what was just around the corner. And then I think it started the talk of the bat soup and wet markets and so on, started sometime in, I think, about the 10th, 15th of January. And then it gradually, I was expecting it to be a known story and nothing. But it gradually increased throughout the rest of January, February, and then sometime around the middle of March, it was suddenly switched. The attitude in the media and the government suddenly switched, and then nothing has been the same since.
Yeah, March was the time officially when the World Health Organization declared a pandemic, and prior to that, in January, when Fauci was wheeled out, really largely for the first time, and people were getting to know him and Burks. And he was saying things at the time like asymptomatic spread was not a thing, that healthy people didn't drive epidemics, as they're referring to it then, as an epidemic within the country. And then in March, it was declared officially a pandemic. And of course, a lot of people didn't know that it was back prior to swine flu, which was another scam, that the World Health Organization had changed the criteria as to what qualifies as an actual official pandemic, which is that you actually don't need any deaths. You can just go, there's a virus there and we think it might do this. So it's just a projection of what you think the deaths could be. And therefore you can declare a pandemic based on that alone. I was caught up with it for a while. I made a video early on called The Dangers of Denial. And then I think it was something, I was trying to look back through videos and get a sense of when I woke up. And I think it was between the 16th and the 18th of March is the closest that I can get to it when I started to go.
That pretty much narrows it down. I mean, that's just before the government switched and introduced lockdown.
And then, of course, when that happened, you're like, oh, right. Because it was the same narrative everywhere. It was the same thing. If you cast your mind back, they were saying initially, we just advise people to stay at home, wash their hands, do all the social distancing, don't go to work and everything. And then, and this happened in France first, then the UK did it, then they did it here in Ireland. The news media would show video footage of people sitting out on the beach or in the park and go, look at these people, they're not taking it seriously. And then the whole narrative was to turn the populace against each other and to get combative with it, which is that those selfish people are going to get the rest of us. You know, they're going to, in the case of the Piers Morgan effect, where that guy has lost his nut this year, he's saying things like, traitors to the NHS, going crazy and having a spurge on Twitter. And that was just how they built it up. But it was the same lie everywhere. But I looked at some of the early propaganda again recently. I was thinking about actually doing a video about some of the propaganda that came out of like Wuhan initially, the spraying. You had all the guys in the hazmat suits spraying everything. And then there was the picture from northern Italy of like a room full of coffins, which actually was, I believe, from Bergamo, but it was actually from a migrant shipwreck from 2013. But it was passed off as if it was actually recent, you know, from these deaths. And then there was another shot of, you know, the trucks at night going by delivering all the coffins. Lockdown Skeptics, actually, I think it was, did an article recently on this, and they described that as actually what happened there was the Undertakers Association in Italy, that governing body, the guys were off work because they were, so they had to bring in the military for one night just to move all the coffins from these various different Undertaker places. And that was it. And people were taken in by that. It was the same with in New York. They had that, they had this island. They've been using it for over 100 years to bury the dead, people who are like, have no next of kin, homeless people, that kind of thing, you know, undocumented citizens, right? Illegal immigrants, as we used to call them. And so this is where they go. And it was like drone footage going, oh, I see all the comments. Oh, this is terrible. This could have been avoided if Trump had taken it more seriously. It's like, no, they do this every single year. But the BBC attempts to pass this off as if it's new. So it was disgusting levels of propaganda, Colin, you know? You may be muted. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. This is another, I mean, I think the real question just now for me is, what about the stuff that was coming out of China, the footage there? I mean, you can say that, okay, that this was faked in various ways in Italy and so on. What's your theory about what was going on in the first 3 months in China? Do you think that, well, where do you think the virus came from? Do you want to talk about this? I don't know if this might affect your standing on YouTube, if you say this even elsewhere. I mean, we're on DLive, but...
I'm not worried about that, feck. I'm going to be off that platform before too long. It's like hanging on by a thread. It's very hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of theories about where it originated from. I didn't really focus too much on its origin. I focused more on its effect, and I focused on the fact that something wasn't adding up. When we learned pretty early on that it was like, hang on, this is totally within the envelope of the normal death rate of a flu, then I was like, what are we doing here? You know, and it became sort of obvious that there was something not right. And then when I looked in further as to the categorization of deaths by death certificate, and then the PCR tests, which initially people like Wolfgang Woodard came out and talked about how you can very easily manufacture a pandemic based on that sort of how the testing works and where you test and who you test. Then I was sort of like, okay, what, there's something wrong here. Why are they doing this? Is it just to make a shit ton of money for pharma? Is it just to bring in more control measures for people? Is it actually global communism that they want to bring in, or something, some sort of technocracy? I, at that early stage, I was still sort of unraveling everything. And I felt like it was actually quite difficult to kind of piece it together. And this is like early April, still trying to figure it out. And then we started hearing terms like Great Reset. And I watched a video recently that I did with John Waters, who you had on the channel recently. And I watched it. It was only a few weeks ago. And I said, this was recorded back in April. I said, we could literally have just uploaded this now and nothing would have changed. The only difference is we didn't know about the full extent of the World Economic Forum's involvement and this guy, Klaus Schwab. And that was the only thing that was different. But by and large...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, nobody had heard of Klaus Schwab in the normal members of the public. None of us had heard of Klaus Schwab until now. And about, you know, April, May, he suddenly sort of emerged. It's like, I can just imagine one of these like Davos ceremonies where he emerges on the stage. But that's how it happened. And he was, you keep with the, resume the story.
Yeah, well, I mean, there wasn't much more to it than that, other than the fact that it's just been steady progress of trying to, well, you talked about the propaganda. I'm just astounded at the docility of people and how they couldn't see through this early on.
Yeah. Well, what I would say first is I think you're right that ultimately it doesn't really matter where, I mean, obviously it's of interest where the virus originated and how it originated, but it, for our purposes, it doesn't really matter. What's clear is that its effects are not very serious. I mean, it's 99 points. I think, is it still 99.6% survival?
It's 99.97%. So it's actually way less. That's for the average. That's for actually the average ages between, I think it's something like 35 and 60.
Yes, right. Okay, that makes sense. But then for overall, I think I read that it was like for children, it's like 1 in 100,000 or something.
Well, put it in another
something way. Staggering.
Yeah, it's extremely low. Put it at the time, I remember, and they don't do this so much now, but in the time, there were a lot of reports in the media of such and such died from corona. They were calling it coronavirus, right? More so than COVID-19 at the time. Such and such died from it. And then you look, so a lot of people, they didn't think the difference between from and with, you know, died fried from or died with. And one of the things they were doing was they would also say, 18-year-old healthy young girl died with COVID. And you're like, well, with, oh, so what did she actually die of? And I remember there was this one infant in the United States who was only a few weeks old and died from an obstructed bowel. But the headline was, first infant to die with COVID-19. And so at the time, it was sort of like, okay, what they're doing here is they're doing this bullshit swab testing. And they're, or it's even more simple than that. The doctor actually says, what symptoms did this particular patient have when they died of stage 4 cancer or whatever the hell it was? And then they say, well, they may have had it like a tissue in their pocket. Oh, okay, let's put that down as the Wu flu, you know? And so it was kind of literally that broad as a definition. But as to where it came from, I mean, look, you know, it's clearly being wielded as a weapon, and that's sort of more important. If we get to the bottom of that, I mean, that will be wonderful. But I think more than anything, we have to look at the people who stand to benefit and the organizations that stand to benefit and why they would be doing this. And, you know, it became clear once you look into, I mean, the lockdowns, right? They tell us that the lockdowns were necessary and we had to do these lockdowns. Well, the first lockdown clearly didn't work because it was necessary to have a second one. The face mask clearly didn't work because you still had to have a second lockdown. Now have to enter a third lockdown and all these different tiers and everything else. Everything about this has been trying to just normalize people into a new pattern of behaviors. And, you know, John Waters once said on my channel, actually, that with a face mask, it's sort of like a bridle that you put on a horse, right? How do you get a bridle on a horse? Right, you have to sort of let them smell it first, rub it on their face, get them used to it. That if you try and put them on first, they're going to freak out. If you try and put them on right away. And that's sort of how it's been. It's that boiling frog effect where people are gradually normalized to all the new behaviors, all the new ways of living, all the new rules, all the new terms.
It's scary to think that there was a first time for every single person. There was a first time that you put on the COVID mask. And I can't remember what it what it was like, what my first time was like, so to speak. But it's funny to think that for each of us, there was a decision. Okay, I'm going to go along with this. I'm going to do this.
I want to say I've never worn it anywhere, really? Ever. No.
Ever? That's amazing. No. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I have worn it to go into supermarkets, Uber rides, taxi. I think that's it. Yeah, I did wear it on a train once, but I ended up just taking it off halfway through because I thought no one's, you know, I'll just claim medical exemption.
which everybody has to. Now, I hate that at the same time because it means that we have to sort of play the game. Well, you have to sort of play the game as opposed to, no, I'm not wearing it because look, I have a right to determine what I'm going to wear. I have bodily sovereignty. What the hell? But we don't have that. I mean, this is just, it's incredible, Colin, that we, in just a matter of months, fundamental rights we never thought in our wildest dreams would be taken from us in this particular way. Like I always thought, like, you know, we get done for like talking, saying stuff like, well, I'm against this particular level of mass immigration because it might lead to this. Like I thought we just get prosecuted under hate speech. I thought that was the kind of conversation. I mean, conversations about hate speech seem quaint by comparison, right, to what we're dealing with now, where it literally is going to get to a stage where it'll be illegal to criticize the efficacy and safety of a vaccine. No, we're so close to this now, right? Vaccine misinformation will be declared dangerous because you're putting people's lives at risk.
Yeah, there's just so much to say about this. Every point is worth discussing. One thing is, why do you think they make it so easy to have a medical exemption? Because I have a theory about this.
Okay.
They've done it purely because it completely clears them from the charge of being totalitarian. Because all you have to say is a medical exemption. And so they can afford to do that. It instantly does away with, oh, we're not totalitarian, that there are always exemptions. We understand that. But at the same time, they can afford to do this because they know that 95% of people won't use it. So 95% of people will conform to this norm.
Yeah, so exactly, because they're aware that people don't want to see, be seen to be the other or the
exactly.
Yeah, and it's the Ash experiment. I mean, it's just pure Ash experiment, you know. The lines, you know, pick which line matches the other line, you know, that actually, I mean, that's what it is, yeah. Group dynamics, you know, people sort of like, we're going along with this together. And why am I doing this? Well, everybody else is wearing this. I don't want to be seen to be the one who's making a fuss.
Yes.
Because if I say something, then I kind of seem selfish. And this is a pandemic, don't you know? So they also have the guilt tripping components that they can bring in there. Oh, you know, if you have an exemption, it's fine. But, and of course, you know, there's also the other thing, which is a lot of people are afraid to even exercise their right to a so-called medical exemption, even though I don't want that to even be a right, as I don't want to wear it. But the fact that you'll get some snarky doorman in going into a Tesco or something who will say something to you like, oh, where's your mask? You don't want that confrontation. People naturally want to avoid as much of that as possible. And of course, there's been so many incidents where people have faced so much grief from not wearing it that to a degree, officially, you can have an exemption. But realistically, unofficially, it's not always recognized.
Exactly.
Those signs, you know.
Exactly. Officially, you're allowed the medical exemption, but socially, you might suffer from using the medical exemption. Because all it takes is one busybody to be there and saying, well, have you got proof of it? Can you prove it? What is your medical condition? And so you always risk, because you don't know it, how could it escalate if I do this? But I just think it's interesting from the government's or the authorities' point of view. I think they've done this, and that specifically they don't require you to prove your medical exemption. That's the point that I'm making here. Why have they made it so easy to do this? I think because they understand that some people will, but the vast majority of people will not use this. So it's they can only gain, in fact, from offering this easy exemption because it makes them look tolerant and lenient and, you know, whatever.
Well, they also may not have wanted to open themselves up to very obvious lawsuits where someone would say, look, I've got COPD. I clearly can't wear it. I've got reduced lung capacity. So they would have that in the back pocket that they could use as an out. But as you say, the vast majority go along with it because it becomes, and tragically, as I talked about many months ago, has it become a cultural norm? And it seems that, yes, it has. That's far more dangerous than it actually being a law. Likewise, with something like the next stage of this, because the mask was always a soft test to soften people up to the idea of health passports, an app, a QR code that you would have to scan at the entrance of a doorway or onto the, to get on the bus or the train or just go anywhere. Right. So this idea that they'd eventually get you to that place, you know, and, you know, that's sort of what's happened. It is a face burqa, you know, it's, there's a, well, why do we wear masks? Well, it kind of used to be because of virus, but now it's just sort of just good, you know, social, it's just good health. It's just a good practice we've gotten into. It's a good habit we've got into. And that's what we do. And it's mandatory here to do that because it's a social courtesy. And that's far more dangerous. Likewise, if they don't make the health passport mandatory in law, but all businesses go along with it, we're screwed anyway. If most people go, oh, yeah, I'll consent to that, we're screwed. Because then it's like, well, what are you going to do?
Well, indeed. And this is something that the government have done quite a lot recently, is they've worked out that they don't need to do things. They can get corporations, private businesses, to do things for them, like censorship, for example. So it's perfectly legal to say a lot of things, but if you say them, you will lose your Twitter account or you will lose your YouTube channel. So in other words, it's the government sort of offloading police state responsibilities to the corporations, to private bodies, private entities. So therefore, it's not a police state and it's not a censorious social climate. These private corporations can do whatever they like. We're not going to interfere with private businesses, are we? So,
except shutting them down, of course, when we want to trash the economy. But that's other than that. But afterwards, all the things they do, it's up to them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those are small private businesses, not the global corporations. But the point is, I think that this is something the government has learned to do, because again, that completely evades charges of totalitarianism or heavy-handedness. Just get private bodies to do the dirty work. And then they take the heat, and it doesn't matter because they're private, so they can do what they like. And of course, you can always say, well, if you don't like this, then use an alternative. It doesn't matter that there aren't any alternatives. So the same with the COVID thing. I think you'll get it where, well, if you don't want to wear a mask on a flight, just use a different airline. That's actually insane. It doesn't mandate it.
There's a guy here, another vaccine shill here, and he's always on the television. His name is Professor Luke O'Neill. And he actually said this on a program here in Ireland. He said, well, look, you know, if obviously you don't want to go to Australia. If you don't want to go to Australia, that's fine. Now, hold on a second here. I want to go to Australia, okay?
I saw this guy.
Don't want to take the vaccine. Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable. I also don't want to take the vaccine. But they're conflating the two. And this is exactly the sort of thing that you would get from, like, a really abusive parent or something like that, or just – or some
it's psychological abuse, an abusive lover or something. Well, if you don't – yeah, sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is actually – I had this gentleman on before by the name of John Anthony, and he's actually an NLP practitioner, and he's a man who's a hypnotherapist and a hypnoanalyst, and he was talking about this exact relationship that people have with the state, which is an abusive – they're in an abusive relationship with a narcissist. And you can't appease a narcissist. And you described the love bombing phase where it's all wonderful and there's huge expressions of affection in the beginning and they shower with you all this kind of stuff and gradually sort of start to take you away from your family and they bring in all the other elements where they start to sort of grind you down, isolate you and everything else. And that's precisely what the government did, both in the UK, here in Ireland. This courtship began, you know, we're all in this together, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, lauding the frontline workers while they're busy making their TikTok videos, right? And they're doing all these kinds of things. And then gradually, then there's the abandonment phase, which is where they stuff you in lockdown. And that's precisely the same abandonment phase after all the abuse of the sort of narcissistic husband who beats his wife and then disappears. And then he comes back later, months later, and she can't ever appease him. But he says something like, sweetheart, I've changed. You know, that's the second time after they give you a little bit of freedom. It's like they've given you a beating in a cell and they come in later on and they go, oh my God, you're really suffering. Here's a warm cup of tea. You know, they did it themselves and you take them. Oh my God, aren't they so nice that they would do this? They're giving us Christmas. Isn't that so wonderful? You know?
Oh, fuck. It's just chilling. It's terrifying. And of course, in the case of Southeast England, they didn't, they were saying that we were going to get Christmas. And then they kind of took it aside at the last minute there.
Was it Laura Perrins is her name? I might be getting her name wrong. And she was saying there that they said, we need to lock down so that we have Christmas. We need to go to whatever your tiers were over there, tier three. We do levels, you do tiers. And they were saying, we need to do tier three or whatever so we can have Christmas. Then they cancel Christmas anyway. And then in January, you have to go back into tier 4 or 5 or whatever the hell you're in. So, you know, it was all ultimately like every element about this, as we've described, has been gradually acclimatizing people, giving them false hope, pulling back, then going in for the kill again. And then people don't even notice. It's like this. It's like people don't even remember. As a colleague of mine here, Thomas Sheridan, he was saying that people don't even remember like the Black Lives Matter thing. Right in the middle, George Floyd. Like you just manufacture this guy out of nowhere as some sort of hero, despite holding a gun to a pregnant woman's belly. But anyway, this guy just created as this messianic figure, right, to celebrate. And RTE had written, all the mainstream media here, written all these articles about all these BLM protests, very, very important BLM protests. And nothing in there at all about at the time, right in the middle of the summer, that we were in a lockdown. That there were thousands of people, that there was no social distancing going on. Why were they defying all the travel restrictions and lockdown and everything else? But they were going crazy a few weeks earlier about the fact that there had been a few people who'd shown up to John Waters and Gemma O'Doherty in a court case against the lockdown. So things that sort of serve the interest of the oligarchs, that's absolutely fine. And this is, and you're noticing this again, by the way. You're noticing this again in comment sections. Right now it's happening with a vaccine. You'll notice that they'll say things like, you know, I talked about this today and how is this a thing? You know, the first doses of vaccine have just touched down in the country and they show the footage and the pictures and all that stuff. And then, you know, they tell you how many doses there are. And they describe this phenomenon of vaccine nationalism. Oh, they're all going to compete with the vaccine. All the big countries are going to buy up all the doses. It's terrible. And the government's not doing enough to get more doses to people. In other words, they know that there's often, stop me if I'm rambling, they know that there's regularly this kind of waxing and waning of the support for government, right? And the support for authority and people, even though they've bought into it, and even though there's a high level of trust in government and media, there's still subconsciously deep rooted within people, this desire to kick against authority just occasionally. And so what they do is they take that, they don't want that energy to coalesce into an anti-establishment movement, could be dangerous to their power. So they direct it like a pressure release valve, and they direct it over to things like, you can criticize the government, no problem, so long as that criticism supports the ultimate agenda, which is, well, oh my God, we're not getting vaccinated by the government fast enough, you know? So it's perfect for them. This is precisely what they want, and they've succeeded in doing it. I see this in the comments.
This is the kind of thing that they've probably been devising for years, and probably decades, but I definitely think in the last 10, 15 years, I'm guessing at that time frame, but I think in that time frame they've been doing sort of psychological research, market research, PR tests, and so on to work out how best to manipulate the public. And I know, we've always been manipulated, and what's the name, Burnham. I know all that. But I think that there's the really intent, because you can see, and even then this year itself, there have been these things going on. You've talked about them on your channel, where it's a report of some market research experiment. They're working out how to play the public like a fiddle. And that includes things like this, where it's a make-believe release valve to just make the public think that they're in control, that they can... They're still in the position where they can criticize their own government. Of course, we're living in a democracy, but they're not really.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, I was reading that before about some legal arguments that were made as to how to sort of use this psychological manipulation to get people to coerce them into the vaccine. There was a lot of different arguments made, but chief among them are things like, how could you live with the guilt if you didn't get vaccinated and pass the virus on to someone you loved and they died? You know, that kind of crap. Like the greatest trick they pulled was convincing healthy people that they're sick. This idea that we are an asymptomatic carrier, and the latest one, a pre-symptomatic carrier. In other words, you know, you're not sick and you haven't even been around anybody to actually get sick, but you could be sick, so you better act like you're sick. You can get someone sick.
Just in case you are. I mean, that's just fucking ridiculous. Better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I said somebody used the expression behavioral science. That was the term I was reaching for, but couldn't find in my head.
Sage. Yeah. Sage was your organization over there, and there was a government. There was one of these PDFs with all the advice of the government, and it talked about, I know the guys over at UK Column did some great work on this. They talked about how it was saying, you know, how it's important to continue to up the fear in the media. Sorry, I'm really red. I'm like a beetroot in this video. Sorry. But it was like to basically continue the fear in order
maybe that's early symptoms.
Yeah, it's early symptoms of COVID. I've actually got a fever here. It's not good.
You might start slowly coughing throughout the course of the stream.
But it's, I tell you, that's actually, do you know what? This is something I did want to say to you, because maybe I think we've all in this kind of fringe movement in the dissident right have all felt this maybe our entire lives of not fully fitting in with the system, right? And I remember in my early 20s, mid-20s, I used to suffer a lot with depression and anxiety, and I used to go to therapists about it. And consistently what they tell me was, when they kind of interview me or whatever they do, they go, well, you always seem to talk about your work, your job, your lifestyle and everything and how unhappy you are. And it seems to be a constant source of distress for you, you know? And I remember being in all these just soul destroying corporate jobs, you know, the rat race, you know, getting up in the morning at a ridiculous hour to commute, to go into work and to be in a job that just crushes your soul and that there's no humanity in it at all. And there's nothing of you. There's nothing of you that you're able to bring to it that is creative, that is of your individual, you know, of your identity and who you are and your personality. And, you know, it's been in recent years. Now, I always thought, I said, there's something wrong with me that I can't work within this. How come everybody else seems to be just getting on with it? And they're there and they're just like corporate drones and they're getting on with it. And it seemed to me that most people, and this has been very obvious in the last few years, but especially this year, that most people...
Can I just interrupt you? Yeah. There was a meme to this effect sometime during this year that I don't think I can put it on screen, but it's the guy offering you some antidepressant pills, and he says, upset over the fact that you're forced to work or study for 40 plus hours a week, you're in debt, the society around you is crumbling, the world is controlled by paedophiles, and nobody loves you. Must be some chemical imbalance in your head, lol, take these pills.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I thought when I was a younger man and much less wise that there was something. I'm amiss, right? It's my problem. It's my problem, and I don't fit into this world. And, you know, as the years went on and I started doing YouTube, what we do is just sort of like showing how the magic trick is done. We lift the veil on everything in this reality, and we realize that it is like a simulacra of what life should be. It's not real. It's a construct. And that actually gave me a great deal of peace. Because I've learned more about myself over the last 5 years doing this job. And, you know, and I was like, okay, this is it. I've got purpose. I've got meaning now. But this year, it's especially true because you look around there and you see people who don't question it. And then, and that's when you get, when you start asking, you start speaking to Joan Ormey about this stuff and you say, well, you know, it's actually a scam. And let me just tell you about PCR testing. And let me tell you about it. And you start getting into it and they freeze up, right? They give you the look. They give you that, what do they call it? The fluoride stare.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
And then, they just switch off, right? Or it becomes an argument where they have to, they become the greatest evangelists of the agenda itself. Sorry, my computer wants to restart. Don't do that. Remind me tomorrow, computer. Sorry, but it's incredible. It's one way or the other. Either they have to go, I got to go now, or they defend the government and the media. How dare you disagree with the government and the media?
Or they'll change the subject. They'll say, okay. So anyway, what are we doing tonight? Kind of thing. Yeah. They'll change the subject in a jokey way so as to deflate the situation. Because, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. And I've said this many times. I remember saying this back in 2014. As an outsider or somebody who doesn't conform, you have a kind of a duty to accept that most people aren't like that, because otherwise you will drive yourself nuts. You will drive people away. You've got to accept most people are conformists. It's not the end of the world. It's just the way people are. And it's probably ironically, the way that society has to be and the way that people have to be, because if everyone was like us, there would be just constant disagreements and nothing would ever happen. Nothing would ever get done. But unfortunately, the cost of that is what we're seeing now. That most people are conformists, and so you can lay down a social agenda. If you have sufficient control of the narratives and so on, then you can basically make people do almost anything. And that's what we're seeing here. I mean, and I do think that the COVID mask is the number one reason for it, I think, is just to train people into open, explicit obedience. I think they're actually going to try to make it sexy. I think, in fact, they already are, really. But you're going to start seeing like cute girls, young women, fit, and they're wearing the mask, and it's just a thing. So, yeah, this is
yeah. What so it,
young
it's,
women it's, are like nowadays.
Yeah, the cult of cool, right, and fashion and everything else, and that would be there. But you actually made me think there when you were saying about how if everyone was like us, there'd just be constant disagreements. Perhaps this is the reason why. You and I have talked about it many times when it was like, how do we coordinate people in our movement against censorship, for instance? Maybe this is the reason the dissident right can never organize and get together and do anything. Too many conflicting personalities.
It is, because we're high in, as Jordan Peterson would say, we're high in low in trait agreeableness. And so it's like herding cats. And I've been trying to do it for 6-7 years. And this is the trouble. All of the nonconformists congregate in the dissident right, or maybe on the fringe left as well, the more radical left. Not that I think we're radical, by the way. I think we're just sane. But anyway, we are pushed to this point. I think it's probably the same on the left as well, but they have money and infrastructure with which to persuade people to just shut the fuck up and get this thing done that we need to get done. Whereas we are on this side, we don't have anything like that.
We don't have the NGO sector. We don't have access to mainstream media. We have none of the apparatus of the state, which goes without saying. And we've seen that consistently, you know, here in Ireland, where there was John Waters and Gemma Doherty's case, and how that was very quickly hand-waved away at the courts. And it can always be done under, well, everything the government has attempted to do is under the common good and so forth. You can just roll that out all the time. And likewise, Simon Dolan had a very similar judicial review in the UK. And that was thrown out under similar arguments. And then he attempted to appeal it in the Supreme Court, and they just outright rejected it. And now they've actually closed the barn doors afterwards, because they've said that the particular type of judicial review that he started in whatever high court or lower court, whether he used, now there's changes as to how the documents, what the length of the documents can be. So he would actually never have been able to make the case that he did again. You know, no one will be able to challenge in the way that he did again. So we're seeing like levels of corruption that are freaking demoralizing, but like just so unbelievably widespread that they have, like, as you say, they have planned this for the better part of the last probably 50 years. I mean, not necessarily COVID, but certainly the requirement of getting all of these governments, these world leaders, and their instruments of state under the one umbrella of the New World Order. They've certainly managed to do that over a very extended period of time, and then knew which buttons to press and when. Like, for instance, someone like Matt Hancock, very scary individual, right? This guy is extremely sinister. I don't know how people didn't see through him months ago. But, you know, he's pictured 2017, 2018, attending conferences at Davos with Mr. Klaus Schwab. And he's also talked about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. That was back in 2017 and 2018. He's talked about this. And the Fourth Industrial Revolution is Klaus Schwab's brainchild, right? And so what a coincidence that this particular man is now, he's got the finger on the button. He can initiate lockdowns that do exactly what the Great Reset requires, which is the wealth.
It's the health minister of Great Britain. Exactly. How the hell does that happen? I'm going to find out when he became the health minister.
It was, I believe in 2017, he was the minister for technology or.
Yeah. In 2018 for 6 months, digital culture, media and sport. And since 2018, he's been right. So a year after he was at Davos. Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, is this, how obvious could it be? Is something fishy is going on here?
Yes. And what's really extraordinary is Boris Johnson. Initially, he was like, I mean, this was very early doors back when I didn't agree with him. So that's, you know, back when I didn't agree with what he was saying at the time, he said, maybe we should just let it go through the country, you know, and let it spread through people and take it on the chin. And I was furious at this because I bought into the narrative. This is way back in March. But now looking back going, yeah, that's actually the strategy. So he clearly had it right the first time, like Trump, but something changed. Someone got me in a room somewhere.
Yeah. At this point, I was completely on the fence. I really was on the fence until about May, at which point I decided, you know, that this is weird, the lockdowns and all this. Prior to that, I was always just, I didn't want to nail my colours to the mast on anything, because I didn't know what I thought. But at that period, I wonder what, so do you think that was, or what do you think happened there? Because I remember, you're absolutely right, that Boris was talking about herd immunity, and there were people on our side saying, he doesn't care about people. He only cares about the economy. He doesn't want to shut down the going to lockdown because that would damage the economy. He just cares about money.
Very interesting. What was very strange, actually. The Boris thing, I don't know, was that a Polaroid or something? Woke up and one day and he was like a Polaroid on his chest. I don't know. But I do know that, and I fell into this again way back in March. And then I'd woken up then, but the dissident right nationalists, both in the UK and Ireland, largely had fallen for the immediate trap, because we all thought in the beginning when this pandemic was announced, we thought, oh, look, here's an opportunity now to bash the government for having open borders. See, we were right all along, right? And a lot of them fell into that and continued it for a long period of time. We should close the borders. Why? Because they also, obviously, we talk about open borders for other reasons. But I think a lot of nationalists sort of didn't get this in the beginning and thought that we've got a tool to beat the government with on this one particular issue and we're going to use it, as opposed to actually understanding this is not the end of globalism. This is the culmination of it. As I've said, described before, it's the end of globalism as we knew it and the beginning of globalism as we didn't know it.
Yes, indeed. It was something that people were saying, this is an opportunity. We can use this as a cudgel, because of course they should close the airports, and of course they should have. I mean, I think if there actually was a health threat, which I think there probably was, in a small capacity, then they should have closed the airports and closed the borders for a few weeks. But so I think that's reasonable enough. But as you were saying, people thought that it was going to be the end of globalism, because now we'll buy local. And we won't be, commuting into big cities to do, office jobs anymore. We'll now live off the land, and we'll learn, because of course you'll remember this. There was an optimism at the start of it that we'll learn new hobbies. We'll do this time off is going to be so interesting for us. We'll all have a new lease of life. And it turned out that I don't know if anyone learned new hobbies. I think some people did, but it definitely wasn't. Most of it was fuck. I've got to sit indoors during the summer, just on the internet, because there's nothing else to do. I'm going nuts. That was really, and yeah. So I think that there was a misplaced optimism about on our side politically that, we can use this against globalism. And then there was a misplaced optimism among the general public that, this will be a new lease of life for us. It turned out to be neither of those things, because what actually happened was that global corporations came out of this doing fantastically well,
which was the point. It's like it's the end of globalism, it's the end of tyranny, it's the end of the tyranny of globalism that we've endured for so long while the entire globe is locked down and under tyrannical control. Wait, what? But this is exactly right. You shut down the mom and pop shops and suddenly Amazon sales are going through the roof. And of course it's always like, meat processing plants get shut down because of PCR testing, apparently that's a massive spike or whatever, or sort of, that's a vector. But police stations don't get shut down. Amazon warehouses don't get shut down. They're not testing positive in a large degree. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the profits are up for all of the big tech organizations, all of the online retailers, all this sort of stuff. Any organization that within, as we call global homo big tech, stands to make a fortune, meantime their competition is eliminated. And it seems to me like what obviously has happened is that there was actually an endpoint to the predatory, usury based capitalism that we've been living in for so long. And it seems to me that there was no longer any profit to be extracted from the debt that had been built up for so long, debts on, interest rates on mortgages, loans, on business loans, and on loans to smaller banks. And it was the case, this is so much debt in the system, this is never, ever, ever going to be paid back, right? So we need to reset the chronometer to zero, like a great reset. But we can't actually just come out and do it. It's sort of like there's a piece of dirt on the floor you want to get rid of, but you can't just sweep it away because everyone will notice that it's gone. It's sort of like people go, why don't you do that every year? That's very kind of you, Mr. Bank Manager, to remove my debts. But actually what they have to do in order to clear away that piece of dirt, you have to bring in a larger piece of dirt to cover it off. You actually have to bring the system to its knees. So a reset is actually a desirable thing. So what you do, and this is a lot of Irish businesses don't understand this, and likewise in the UK, they're getting all this furlough money, right? The super dole, and they're getting all this, for example, here in Ireland, I'm sure it's something similar elsewhere where you are, but it's this, you don't have to pay your taxes at the moment, like VAT is suspended temporarily, or they're putting a hold on certain taxes, right? For businesses, obviously. Now, when have you ever known the government to not want to get blood out of a stone? They send you scary letters when you're a business owner every so often, and I get them, and it's like, when are you going to pay such and such a tax? You have 30 days, and you ring up your accountant, and then they tell you, that's already paid. We processed that, and so on and so forth. But that's usually how the government rolls. And now suddenly where are they getting all this money from? Well, they're borrowing it from the IMF. And this is what Alexander Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, revealed.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, go on.
Yes, because he was offered a bribe from the IMF and the World Bank. And
was it not like a huge, was it not like 100 billion or something?
It was...
It was something gigantic.
Yeah, it was something. It was something like 92 billion or something like this. Right, you look it up there. The exact figure, I'm not sure. But the stipulation.
Google just auto completed Belarus bribe, and it completed IMF.
Can you imagine? The country at 10 million. Yes. So where was I? Yes.
Right,
so
it was 940 million. Right. So,
Forgive me.
I got
it
wrong.
There you go. I was way off.
Right. But
it's what do they say? Yeah. The stipulations were lockdowns and restrictions and face masks and all these things. And so that gave us an insight instantly. Ah, there you go. Right. So we know where the money's coming from, and we know why there's been this sudden change. Where the World Health Organization and other so-called experts in our countries were previously telling us masks don't work and asymptomatic spread isn't real. And then suddenly there was this change. Now, that also, we have to understand, is very useful in a totalitarian state, which is that you just want people following orders. So it doesn't matter that previous instructions contradict with new instructions, right? It doesn't matter. It's just like, just follow instructions and get ready, get excited for next instructions, right? So that seems to be what we fell into. But you're absolutely right. At that point, you want to build an enormous amount of debt. Once that's built, then it's like a case of, okay, this is not sustainable. And this is where the debt jubilee, this is where the debt forgiveness program is going to come in. And people will be enticed by that. They'll say, well, our government, our state has so much debt that what are we going to do? Good news, because COVID has been just so devastating to people and the economy and lives, it is time to do the right thing and have a great reset. We're going to bury this debt. We're going to just erase it. And people go, oh, that's fantastic. They're so benevolent, right? Another problem reaction is another Hegelian dialectic, right? They eliminate the debt. And then they say, but because we eliminated the debt, we are going to require a few things from you.
Well, and this is the World Debt Reset Program, which was talked about in the Canada. This has come up, I think this is the third time it's come up on Millennial. I don't know if that has been discredited. We talked about it at one point. It was a government committee meeting in, I think, Ontario. I can't remember where. Somewhere in
Canada. The Liberal Party, yes, that's right.
And they said that they'd been told in this meeting, this person said that they'd all been told there's going to be the World Debt Reset Program with capital letters. It's an actual thing. And it's going to basically clear all the debt of every citizen in Canada, but the cost will be that they have to give up all private property, including their houses, you know, land assets, etc. I don't know if that's been discredited as a hoax or not. Sometimes I think that things like that might, and I'm sorry to be even more paranoid, but it wouldn't surprise me if things like that are made up so as to discredit the anti-lockdown side of things. But at the same time, it does seem plausible. I mean, I can understand it. I can believe that that is actually on the card, something of that magnitude, something that would change our way of life that radically.
The reason why, yeah, and I did a video on it, and as you know, and a lot of people watched it, and I think that it factors into the World Economic Forum's video that they, by the way, deleted, right? This video they uploaded in 2016, and it was... it was clips of what they think the future is going to be by 2030. And it was, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? Yeah, because I own a house, I own a car. You know, this is what, what's that comedian's name? The Burger King guy, you know? Alistair Williams. He was saying, you know, I own a car and a house, and at some point, you know, somebody's going to come on and go, we're taking that from you and I'm going to be delighted about it, you know? This is what they've talked about for a while. For example, that famous article from 2016, it's 2030. I own nothing. I have no privacy and life has never been better. Recently, only a few weeks ago, they changed the title of that to something like, this is how my city might change by 2030 or something. Right. So they realize they're getting backlash. I mean, maybe that's a good sign. I don't know. Maybe they're just sort of going, we gave too much away a few years ago. Now people are kind of wising up. Maybe we should sort of back off just a little bit, you know, and we'll still wheel out the agenda. We'll just have to do it a little bit slower, a little bit more cautiously, a little bit, you know, a little more tactical about it. But that's that reset program of surrendering your private property rights, aligns clearly with the agenda of the World Economic Forum. Again, I put that out there speculatively, haven't been able to verify it, like you say, but it's starting to sound somewhat credible, especially the aspects of about the mutant strain. They described it as COVID-21. And then apparently we're going to have COVID-23 and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's all potentially on the cards. They can just keep doing that all the time. And the problem is, like, we're on D-Lives, you can probably say this, but with the vaccine causing so many side effects, adverse reactions as they describe them, and I think definitely sterility is on the cards. I think that's inevitable. But if there is, and there has been, what, 3% of people in the United States reporting some very serious lifelong effects after this. And we don't know, of the other 97%, we don't know how many of them will present with adverse effects much later on in 2021 and further. But, you know, I think that the damage will become apparent. And what will happen is that the media will simply say, because we're all separated and isolated, and, you know, the whole point of the mask is that, you know, you when you're standing next to somebody, like, on a urinal, you know, if you can, because you're separated out, that you can't nudge them and go, this is all a lot of bollocks, isn't it? You know, you can't get together someone on the bus or in a pub and go, this is all shite. That's the point of the mask. It's the point of the social distancing, is to prevent any kind of... It was that line from the film, The Quiet Man. We go down to the pub to talk about treason. And that's all sort of gone now. We can't plot and scheme and talk and you know, and there's no trust anymore.
Yeah, so I remember that, noting that when the smoking bans came in, and I'm, you know, I'm not a smoker anymore, although I am quite a passionate vapor, but that's besides the point. I still think that it was wrong to ban smoking in all pubs. I still think that they should have allowed exemptions and all that, even now, even though I'm not a smoker. And at the time, I remember this was like 2006, 7. I think they all came in then, like 5, 6, 7. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I remember thinking the pub is the heart of the community and it's a place where adults go that isn't a strip club. So now they're the only place for adults to go where it's only adults is a fucking strip club. There's nowhere that you can just go and have a chat. The pubs now are full of kids and families. It's completely altered the point of the pub.
Well, they used to be before 2020, you know, when they were open, right?
Oh yes, of course. Well, that's another matter altogether.
But my point,
the
is,
point is that they've eliminated that place where people would go to chat and often have quite, you know, raucous discussions.
Yes.
And so on. So that is gone, and that I think that started with the smoking ban, but of course now it's just wiped out.
And there won't be a means for people to get together and share that kind of information in a social setting and go, well, since my daughter got the vaccine, you know, this happened to her. Because what will happen is, because we're so fragmented now and because there will be increased levels of censorship, right, in every regard, I suspect, if they get their cyber pandemic thing and their cyber, you know, all the blackouts that they're intending for, that they're just... And the fact that people are, you know, even in communities, afraid to go beyond, you know, their 2 kilometer, 5 kilometer restrictions, is that it's going to be level 5 now very soon here in Ireland. I just think there's not enough discussions. People are just sort of powerfully keeping everything within themselves and not questioning, you know, behind the mask. You know, there's a lot, there may be a lot going on in the minds of some people, but generally speaking, they're just sort of going along and following instructions. But I think that there won't be enough. Will they have the wherewithal to piece together that the vaccine is actually the thing that's causing all of the ill effects and all of the death that we might see? God, I don't want to sound blackpilled about it, but I mean, will that actually be the case? Or will they the media will simply chalk it up to a mutation and that it's another virus? And that, you know, it's like what Bill Gates said, you know, we have to prepare for the next one. That will get attention this time. And he says it with a grin. And then his wife laughs as well. And the media doesn't go, hold on, Bill, what the fuck did you mean by that? Like, do you know something we don't? Are you planning a bioweapon attack or something? Because you talked about that before. What's the story? Nobody talks about this. You know, it's just incredible.
It's unbelievable. And again, you think this is how you know that the media is just, it's either fucking useless or it's on board with the agenda. There's some reason why a journalist wouldn't pick up on that and say, well, hold on, Bill, when are you expecting the next one, and how do you know that there will be a next one, and why will it not be like all the previous pandemics, which were ultimately trivial? How do you know that the next one's going to necessitate this, even though this one doesn't necessitate all of this shit?
No.
I mean, it's nonsense. But it reminds me of something I wrote on Telegram a few months ago. Let me just see if I can find this. I did read it out on a previous millennial, but I want to read it out with this one because I think you'll probably have something to say about it. I'm going to read it out again. Sorry to repeat myself, everyone, but here it is. For the powers that be, COVID, the virus plus lockdown, problem plus solution, is the perfect tool to use against the public. It can be invoked, threatened, implemented, revised, expanded, revoked, reintroduced. Sometimes the analyses of the virus will make sense, but they don't need to. Sometimes the uses of the lockdown will make sense, but they don't need to. It is all entirely at the whim of the government, because the media will ratify whatever decisions it makes as perfectly justified and proportionate, and completely in line with established precedent, even though there are so many contradictions along the way that there is no established precedent. A BLM rally without masks is safe, because bullshit. A Remembrance Day parade with masks is unsafe, because bullshit. You think this doesn't make sense? Well, you just don't understand science. The virus is endlessly malleable as a problem, the lockdown and associated other measures endlessly malleable as a solution. Never have so many been so controlled so easily.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very well put. And, you know, it's likewise the other ridiculous protocols in there, things like in pubs. The idea that, you know, here in Ireland, it was like the meal has to be €9, or in the UK, it's got to be at least a substantial meal qualifies as a Scotch egg, you know, because apparently COVID knows the difference between what you're eating and how much it costs and how long you're in the pub. There were restrictions on, I think it was something like 90 out of 100 minutes, something like that. And then you have to wash the tables down at a certain time. And then I guess, you know, I mean, it's all of these things. And that's the scariest thing of all, is that no one, the vast majority of people don't look at that and go, that's bollocks. But like, this is what we're saying. Where do people take their cues from? You know, you come back to the Ash experiment again. They're looking for validation. They're looking for the group dynamics. They're looking for the verification from the media. Like, for example, when here in, when he was Taoiseach a few months ago, Leo Varadkar eventually came out after the fact and said, oh yeah, this new HICWA report has shown that we categorize certain deaths as COVID, but actually it's when you revise it down, the people who died with it as opposed to the people from it, it's much less, right? And then he said something like, you know, we had to do it this way and so on and so forth. And the public just sort of ride with that. And because the media doesn't make a big deal about it, and that's where they look to verify, is this a scandal? Has the scandal happened? They just go, well, they must have done, so they had to do it like that for a reason. Why do you think they did it? Well, there must be a good reason for them to do it like that. And then actually, if you keep looking, if you drill down even further and further and further, the amount of people in Ireland who've died of COVID directly, not with, but actually from it, is, last time I checked, it was actually less than 100.
That's incredible.
But they, I mean, they advertised, Colin, that 1,700 people died.
Yeah, I think it might have been Peter Hitchens. Somebody said recently that in Britain, in England and Scotland and Wales, it was something like, and Northern Ireland, for now, I'm just going to be precise. In Britain, it was something like, was it 1,600? It was something, an astonishingly low figure for people who had died without comorbidities, who weren't 80 plus. The actual number of people who have died just from COVID is astonishingly low, given the measures that are being taken against it. Now, you've reminded me of several things. I've been making notes of things to bring up. By the way, how long do you want to go on for? We've been going for an hour now, and I think you'll agree that it's really flown by. Riveting.
Absolutely, I hope so. I'm happy to carry on. I don't want to step on the toes of the great James Alsop, who I look forward to seeing.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll go to right up to the hour then. skate up to the edge. Okay, because there is obviously just so much to be said about this. Okay, so one thing is, I think you've got this, the fear of, and I've brought this up before, but basically, a lot of people don't believe in religion anymore. A lot of people don't believe in nation anymore. A lot of people don't believe in much anymore. But they do believe in health. And so if you can get, and of course they don't believe in an afterlife, so they believe this is the only life they'll ever have, which is, you know, I'm not religious myself, so I tend to go along with that. And therefore, with that in mind, you've got them basically by the balls because you can get them terrified about their health. And so this is how... You're coughing there. Are you all right?
Sorry about that. I should mute my microphone when that happens.
I'm just... All right, I'll continue.
Dun, 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 dun. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so where was
I? Well, on the subject you're talking about, we might need another 20 minutes, actually, if you can. Yes, myself and Thomas Sheridan have talked about this and John Waters as well. Thomas Sheridan has described it as COVIDanity, right, as if COVID is a new form of Christianity. I described it as a secular Sharia. And yes, it does functionally produce sort of the same ritualistic behaviors as almost to obsessive compulsive degree. It fulfills certain things that and certain attributes of Catholicism in Irish people. And it's very interesting that I suspect, I'm getting the sense that in the UK, there's a little bit more resistance, a little more skepticism of government than there is in Ireland. There's more of a Protestantism in the UK almost.
With in England, it's more the Protestant thing of, well, your social duty kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. And what we've seen is definitely a deference to authority, to the white coats, a lab coat wearing PhDs and professors, then the new high priests of a secular religion. And, you know, this is the danger, right, of that's posed by things like communism, because it attempts to basically replace God. And instead of seeing God above man as the ultimate authority, which is the source of your rights and freedoms, and that they can't be touched. This is the purpose of you know, as functionally of saying that God is the source of your rights, that they can't be touched by God. Sorry, they can't be touched by man. But if man replaces God, then the focus of people's attention is no longer on the transcendent, but on the material, and their eyes are brought from above to below, and now there is no authority above the state and the tyrannical rule of man. And men are corruptible, and absolute power will corrupt them absolute. And so God is beyond other material concerns and corruption, but man is not. And so this is functionally, Irish people have not twigged this as they've become more atheistic over the last few years. And I know John just talked about this with you as well, and what's been done. This and as has E. Michael Jones, it was a great chat I listened to today with the two of you. It's happened. And I think the Irish have a new, even the atheist Irish people have a meaning in their life. It's a terrible meaning. As you say, it's associated with fear of death. And therefore, a great many control measures can be brought in to keep people in line. But it is giving people a sense of meaning that materialism didn't. And it's everywhere. COVID is like the devil or God, right? It's like a superstition. It can be on the bus. It can be in a person's nose or mouth, but it also can be on any hard surface. It can be outside. It can be in your car. It could be all over the place, and it's watching you. It's all over the place, but it's in the pub. And it's keeping you from your family. Micheál Martin, who is our Taoiseach, said, it's not the government that's locking you down. Right? It's the virus. Imagine actually saying this as if a virus could pass legislation.
Yeah.
And enforce
it's the virus that you should hate. It's the virus that you should be fighting against. It's not us. It's
interesting that they've tapped into this latent feeling of a need for something to replace religion within people. But they've bastardized it as opposed to it being something optimistic and hopeful and beautiful and about goodness and kindness and actually community and coming together. And, you know, Mass, for example, you got tickets for tickets to actually go to Christmas Day Masses, right? Before it was always like, you know, somebody drops out of church or they haven't been to church in a long time. Like I wasn't for a long time. I went back to the church last year. You know, you're always invited. You're always welcome to come back, but not anymore. Not anymore. Now, you need a ticket first. This is a closed club. So they've completely destroyed religion. I mean, it's sort of like the piano that was on the top of the stairs. Now they just pushed it down. It's completely gone now. And what's happened is there's no leadership within the Catholic Church that's actually stood up and gone, hold on a second. This is precisely the time when we should be trying to reach out to people and giving them hope and optimism and everything else because of this time of crisis. Where were the priests praying with the dying in the nursing homes and, you know, in the care homes and hospitals? They're nowhere to be seen. They went along with the agenda, and then they defaced the church. And I said this in a video many months ago. If Christ was here now, he would be ripping up the social distancing stickers and signs in the churches in the same way that he, you know, upended tables of money changers in the temples. You know, and it's precisely the same thing. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. It has become a cult that people have been happy to say, this is a suitable replacement now. This will functionally give me something, you know, to do and to believe in and to fight against and to kick against while they're arguing for their own oppression.
And another aspect of it, which is rather more cynical, I mean, I generally think that religion is necessary and good for people. But realistically, in the real world, what often happens with any religion is that it's beyond the theology is beyond the understanding of ordinary people. So what emerges into the consciousness of ordinary people is just tenets, rules, doctrine. That's fine. That's probably the way it needs to be. But the same thing happens with COVID, except instead of religious theology, it's scientific. Well, it's science. So what you get is people cannot understand the science because it's just beyond most people to understand it. So what emerges into their consciousness is simple rules, which they can't, in the same way that people could not, like ordinary people couldn't question religious theology because they can't understand it. People cannot question science because they can't understand it. So they've got no choice but to just believe it and accept it. Now, I'm not saying this as an anti-religious tirade. I'm pro-religion. But I am noting that this is one of the mechanisms by which it is implemented, but one of the ways in which socially it manifests. But with COVID, this is obviously toxic because you end up with a situation where you have the cult of science and people cannot question it because most people don't understand. Most people they don't have the time, they don't have the inclination, and they don't have the ability to look into all of this stuff. So yeah, and someone can, if you do voice skepticism about the rules that you're being given, then someone else can say to you, do you really think that you know better than the scientists? Do you really think that you know better than the government? And so on. And then that leaves you thinking, well, what are the odds that I know better than the scientists who are trained in this stuff? And I'm just a layman. There you go.
Well, I listen to the experts. That's one that I've had before. I listen to the experts. Yeah, it is. It reminds me a little bit of like what people weren't able to understand the Latin Mass or something, right? And then, you know, this is just way too, I can't understand what they're saying. But also, you know, certain aspects of the dogma are sort of beyond the layman. But
someone's just pointed out that it was exactly the same with climate change. And exactly.
Exactly. And in fact, Neil Ferguson, right? He was the guy who said that, 2 million people were going to die in the United States, you know, and 500,000 would die in the UK. And, you know, this is Imperial College London. He's previously created all of these data models for climate change. All of them have been inaccurate, right? And actually, you know, we have these people who are telling us, you know, that the planet is overpopulated and that we need to reduce the population. And I have to wonder now, these are the same people who've been telling us what the population numbers are and projections about the future. And they've made projections about COVID deaths and projections about CO2 emissions, climate change. And I just wonder if any of that's bollocks. And this is the thing. Look, I don't know. Maybe there are 7 point something billion people on the planet. I remember a few years ago, it was only like 6.5 billion or something, or 6 billion, whatever. But I just have to wonder, like, we just take all of this at face value because an expert came on the television, a talking head said this. And I'm like, well, okay, now I seem well informed. But actually, I have to start questioning so much about what I believe now, especially after this year. I don't know how you feel. I mean, has this made you question anything else?
Not yet, but this year it's been purely on this. But definitely, I think I would be very, very skeptical of anything from now on. I mean, it's the same, and we're safe saying this because we're not on YouTube. It's like in America how if you're I mean, what's the point of voting in the 2024 election when you know that there are machines of electoral fraud in there? ready to be enacted, multiple different types of machines of electoral fraud ready to be activated. So the democracy is a sham. And in the same way, how can you listen to the BBC's science correspondent or medical correspondent or whatever when you're pretty damn sure that they've been lying to you about COVID, like dozens of times, hundreds of times over the course of this year? So how can you trust them again? I think there is going to be for at least a segment of the population, there's going to be a crisis of confidence in the society's institutions and experts.
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, in the level of corruption. Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. But I mean, to give people, I mean, I don't like hopium for hopium's sake. That's the last thing I want. But there is going to be a bit of a cataclysm very soon. Bit of one. How can you have a small one? But I think there is going to be this decision. There's a fork in the road coming very soon, and it's around the vaccine. Some people, this is the thing, I consider the mask completely abhorrent and a complete violation of my rights as an individual. But a lot of people see it as a minor inconvenience, that it's just a piece of cloth, and this permits me access to this shop or this whatever. But
that's missing the point, though.
Yes, it is, absolutely. But they may, and a lot of people may, draw the line at the idea of a substance being put in their body, especially the fastest ever produced vaccine, which is, by the way, going to genetically engineer your immune system. It's an mRNA vaccine. It's not the same as other vaccines. And now I'm making a video here, and I have a huge amount of notes. I have a folder on COVID. I've never had a folder on a subject for so long, and it's tens of gigs now at this stage: video, PDF, links, all sorts of images and everything else, and things that are all archived. The subject that I'm working on is the vaccine and sterility, right? That's one of the next big videos, and it's a huge project. But it's very clear that this thing is designed to create infertility in men and women, especially women, because that's sort of the bottleneck, right? If you want to reduce the population. And the people who apparently want to keep us safe from a virus that we now know is less deadly than the flu are the same people who are obsessed with things like climate change, reducing people's carbon footprint, which the only way to reduce, you know, CO2 is to reduce human activity full stop, right? Late last year, the UN was talking about the climate accords in Paris to reduce CO2 emissions by 7.6% every year from 2020 onwards to 2030, year on year, right? So it has to be more lockdowns, you see. And the Great Reset website talked about, which so happened recently, they talked about the fact that, well, isn't it such a coincidence that the lockdowns have managed to reduce CO2 emissions by 7%? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the era of Greta Thunberg seems a long time ago. Do you go along with the theory that climate change simply wasn't working for them, so they had to invent a new threat in order to justify the changes to society that they wanted to make?
Yeah, that's what Rosa Corey maintains as well, and she's very much an expert on Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, and I agree. It lines up completely. During the first lockdown, indeed the second one, we've seen more of the physical alterations made to our cities to be more compatible with the green agenda. Expanded cycle lanes, walkways, things that seem relatively benign or good, like, you know, this isn't this great, our cities are more pedestrianized. But these are actually things that they wanted for a long time. And what Agenda 21, the backbone of this is, well, they want smart cities. They want people corralled and living in the cities in small spaces. Right. And largely, I mean, the ultimate end of it is that we actually live in shared accommodations, rather. And that we're going to have all of these large empty buildings. Of course, you look at a city like New York, it's abandoned. Well, that's great. You can just convert them into high density housing. And of course, all of these buildings that used to have businesses in them can be bought up. All these businesses can be bought up on the cheap. The property can be bought up on the cheap. Because how are you going to run? What kind of operation are you going to run? You have COVID restrictions, you have social distancing restrictions that make your business unworkable and unprofitable. So,
yeah. When I went back home a few weeks ago, about a month ago now, and a particular shop, I'm not going to name it because I don't want any trouble coming to them. But a particular shop that's been there all my life, I'm pretty sure has shut down over the course of the summer. And I'm just so fucking sad about it. It was something that I always went, every time I went back up there, which isn't that frequent, to be honest, but every time I did go back up to Scotland, back home, I would always go to this shop, make a point. I'd look forward to it. And I think it's fucking gone.
Correct? But that's so frustrating, because I hear that and I think of something like one of the heart of Dublin, right, of Dublin nightlife is Temple Bar, if you've ever been to Dublin. All these restaurants and pubs and bars, voluntarily. Nobody came to them and said, that's what you have to do. There was never a moment when a customer walked in and they were coughing and spluttering and showing obvious symptoms, and then they left. And then a couple of days later, one of the staff got sick. And then another member of staff called in sick and couldn't come into work. And then suddenly the entire business, all the staff were sick. And then the manager, and then they passed it on to family members, and the elderly family relatives started dying. This didn't happen, right? That's what happens in a pandemic, an actual pandemic. No, that didn't happen. They were told that those things could happen. 9 months later, they're still being told the same lie. They voluntarily shut down. You shut down because the consequences were fines and prosecution from government. You didn't want the police to come around. They're not, to me, I get that, and my heart goes out to those people, but at the same time, I'm conflicted, because it's hard to have sympathy for people who never questioned any of this and just completely went along with it and went, yeah, I'm just going to shut down my business. I mean, literally, the government is telling you. You know that you can't keep this up forever, and you know that the money is not going to last, and this super COVID dole money that you're getting. It's just like they told you, take this can of gasoline and take this, you know, this set of matches and just set fire to your business for a while for us. And they just went and did it. Businesses have to be open in order to be profitable, right? And they're just being told, yeah, that's okay. I'll just, you know, whatever the government says. I had these conversations with people in restaurants. You know, crazy stuff. Like, I remember I was in one particular bar. It was virtually empty. And all we wanted to do was to go in and sit down and have a couple of coffees in the back. We couldn't sit inside because you're not allowed to sit inside because COVID could be in there, right? But you can sit outside in the tent because COVID doesn't like tents or something. And, you know, the place is empty. We just sit down over there. No. The first thing they say, do you have a booking? Like, I have to book a pub?
Yeah.
And then you finally go in and they're saying, okay, I'd like to order just two coffees, please. Oh, you have to do it through the app now. And it's cashless or whatever. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I don't use a smartphone. So the girl I was with, she took out her phone and she's like trying to do the QR thing with the sticker on the table, and it's not working, can't get a signal. And I said to the guy, he's wearing a face shield. I'm like, what are you fucking welding? I'm like, dude, and this is normal now, right? This is not unusual for people wearing a plastic visor on their face. I mean, what the hell? I'm saying to him, do you realize like what the actual fatality numbers were? I start giving him some data just casually, and then I said, like, there's no one in here, is there? I mean, you're not exactly doing the roaring trade that you were doing before. Do you realize that you're going to go out of business soon? And then you know what he said? Yeah, probably.
Fuck. That's just incredible. Was he the owner, or was he just a staff?
It's literally like, hold on, how do I, is this how I put my neck in the noose? Like this?
Yeah.
This tight? Is this okay? You want me to stand on this? I just get up on this stool, is it? Okay, hang on. They're being destroyed. They're just saying, we're going to destroy it. I mean, they must have figured it out at this point, but no, 9 months later, they still haven't got it.
Yeah. But that's the thing. The longer it goes on, the longer that people go along with it, the more they won't want to admit that, oh, fuck, I've been hoodwinked. I've been tricked. Yeah, because I guess that's a sort of equivalent of consumer investment. They don't want to admit, oh, I spent all this money for nothing. Or in this case, I sabotaged my own business for nothing. I was tricked. I mean, that is so humiliating. But it also requires going against the consensus, the social consensus. And I think that this is the main engine here. People don't want to be bad people, and they don't want to seem like they think they're cleverer than the experts and the government and so on.
On that point, maybe this is the final point I make. You know, what's enabled that further? Actually is social media and cancel culture, right? The culture of cancel culture over the last few years that we've seen gradually creeping in more and more. doesn't just affect celebrities anymore.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like a business owner that didn't do this stuff would get easily socially shamed, and at the least, or they'd get a huge fucking fine. But just on the matter of pubs, I want to read out another thing that I posted on Telegram, because I've been using... Oh, by the way, some people were asking if you have a Telegram channel, and I know that you don't, but you might want to consider that, Dave, because people are asking about that. Okay, so here's another thing I wrote. This was in... when was it? Yeah, September. So this is after the lockdown was over, like the proper the summer lockdown.
Yeah.
Today I entered a pub and they told me I had to wear a mask between the door, the front door of the pub, and my table. But I could take the mask off once I got to the table. The pub was full with people seated at every table and nobody had a mask on. But once each customer stood up to leave, they would have to put on their mask before they could walk to the exit. And then once they get to the exit, then they can take their mask off again. And I concluded, utter insanity.
but you're right. It is. It's been propaganda. Ivor Cummins was talking about this. People in Ireland, and I'm sure the UK, have been propagandized beyond belief. It's a psychosis. It's mass hysteria. And I got to be honest, I can comment on the craziness. I don't know how to break the bubble. I don't know how to bring people back from that. If they genuinely, and that's the thing. It's like so many people that you talk to and you point out the insanity to somebody who's waiting your table or in that situation of that guy. And, you know, you go, this is mad. Like you really believe this. And what they consistently come back to is, and what he said to me several times is, you know, we're just following orders. We're just doing what we're told. You know, we're doing what the government tells us. You know, and it really is that thing of, well, you're being told to jump off a cliff.
You know,
this is what your business is doing. You're pushing it down the stairs, and they're doing it. They're doing it. But like, it'll be somebody homeless in the future, and someone will come up and then they'll say, you see that building over there that's now a Starbucks? I used to have a lovely little restaurant in there. It's your own fucking fault, mate.
Yeah. Exactly, because it is only the big corporations who will be able to survive this, and they'll be the ones who buy up everything at the end of this, I think, once all these small businesses, and this will happen progressively with each lockdown. Every time they do this, there'll be more small businesses that just perish, just huge swathes of them every time. And the only ones who'll survive and they'll buy up everything will be huge corporations. So you'll have like Amazon pubs and so on. It just fucking sounds awful.
And China.
That's another thing. So people wanted to ask about that. Someone was saying, opinions on Russia's reaction to the pandemic. Are they avoiding the Great Reset? And also, you know, they're asking about other parts of the world, like China, Iran, Russia. They've also implemented versions of lockdown.
Let me say something about China first, if I can. So if you recall, I've previously talked about the Rockefeller document from 2010, and it was talking about this exact situation. This was their scenario planning document, and they were talking about a pandemic situation. And it starts off with the pandemic that the world had always feared happened, because they've had so much predictive programming over the years that we're led to believe this was just inevitable. This was 2010 now, and they said they thought this was going to happen in 2012 or something like that. And it talks about mandatory face masks, temperature checks on the entrance to buildings, all these things we're seeing now, shuttered buildings, lockdowns and restrictions, all these things were in there. And of course, Rockefeller are behind things like ID 2020, and now they're showing their face now again. So this was all planned, as Alan Kay described, if you want to predict the future, invent it. And it also talked about China in this scenario from 2010. They said China, they're near hermetic sealing off of their borders, and they're shutting down the borders internally. And that's exactly what China did during the COVID crisis. And now what are we seeing? Paul Joseph Watson showed some video footage, and a few other people have talked about this on Twitter and things like that, video footage of, and this has been leaked deliberately, for the same reason as you saw the guy falling over with the mask in China and all that, and the guy spraying everything. The footage recently that's coming out from these nightclubs and pool parties in China of young people dancing around without face masks, and they're not social distancing and everything's normal, that's been put out deliberately. Right? They're saying to you, see, China got it right. And if we just became more like China, you'd have your freedoms back. Hey, young people, you'd love to go back to the nightclubs again, wouldn't you? Look at China. Mm. That footage could be from any year.
Yeah. So do you think that, this is what I asked you at the start, do you think that China, I mean, what do you think happened in China in the first quarter of this year, basically? Do you think that they were genuinely concerned about the virus and they did lockdown, and then that, and including like welding people into their apartments and so on? Or do you think that was all for the benefit of Western powers to justify their, what they wanted to do?
The latter. Absolutely, 100% the latter. Yeah. And I remember the footage, there was The Guardian actually had a video on this, and people were in their apartments shouting down at some politician who was walking around the street or a courtyard or something in an apartment complex. And they were shouting, this is fake, this is fake, this is fake. Absolutely a setup. Absolutely 100%. Exactly what we've seen here was happening over there, but China was used first of all. And actually on the day, the same day that Event 201, you know, Event 201 in New York, which is the tabletop exercise that was in coordination with Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Rockefeller, and also was the World Economic Forum behind that? Who else was behind that? I'm forgetting now. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the guys behind Johns Hopkins. There you go. The guys behind the big graph that everybody's using to track the, you know, the big scary graph. Right. So the dashboard of daily deaths. Event 201 happened, and on the same day in Wuhan, the military games was taking place. And have you seen the footage of the military games? I think I may have sent that link to you before.
I don't think I saw it.
So it's soldiers doing demonstrations, doing their little parades in a large stadium, large like a football stadium. And there's hundreds and hundreds of them. And projected on the ground is UN, United Nations, UN, 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 UN. In other words, on the same day, Event 201, there was this big sort of, this is the messianic thing, right? They have to tell you in advance, right? They have to tell you what we're doing. You know, they have to let you know because they want bad karma. We told you. We told them. This was the launch of the New World Order.
So I guess that neatly brings us to the last thing I wanted to ask you, which, well, we've got 20 minutes left, so we can go a fair amount of time to go into this. The Great Reset, because that is what emerges from the chaos and confusion and oppression of this year. What emerges is the Great Reset. So what do you think that will be, and what do you think it's supposed to be? What do you think is actually going on here, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, functionally, I don't think the Great Reset is any one thing. If first and foremost, it's a nice marketing term for almost anything they want. They can justify anything under the Great Reset. You could begin by saying that it's a wealth transfer. Absolutely, that's one thing. And it's definitely a reset of how into a new financial system. And it's going to be a reset of individuals' expectations of what standards of living are going to be. We've had a lot of rhetoric over the last year, a lot of it, or last couple of years, and many of it coming from the likes of the World Economic Forum on the fact that apparently we're all going to be eating bugs, you know, soy burgers and all this other shit. So we've had that.
That reminds me, sorry, I meant to say that, because I remember about a year and a half ago, Paul Joseph Watson and other people like him were popularizing this idea of the pod, where you would eat bugs and so on. And I remember people saying at the time, oh, you're exaggerating. No one's being told to eat bugs. That's just a sort of MAGA boomer myth. It's a scare story. It's pie in the sky. But now, a year and a half later, it turns out that they were correct about that. I mean, it is now something that they're not talking openly about it, but it does seem to be the upshot of everything they are talking about. That we're basically, you're going to live a fucking depressing lifestyle where you're just plugged into an endless supply of stuff from the big corporations, whether it's food, drink, media, or something else.
Well, yeah, Agenda 21 and the Great Reset sound an awful lot like communism for the proles, but capitalism for the elites at the very top. Right, it's pure technocracy. I don't think it's necessary. I used to, you know, before I was thinking this is just communism, but actually, it's a little bit more nuanced. It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's not pure communism. I think it's wrong when people get into the mindset of saying it's communism. Even more wrong when they say it's fascism. It's definitely not fascism, but it's not communism. It is something new.
Well, there is a merger. I think what people call it fascism is there is a unification of large corporations, of private business and government. That's where that's coming from. And we can definitely see that. I mean, when they give their presentations and they talk about this and they talk about the urgency of it, and this was all over Event 201 and similar briefings, they say things like, they talk about, we need to cut through the, you know, bureaucratic red tape of government and this kind of stuff. And they say things like, corporations, private businesses need to be able to work faster in their response times and reactions to these crises, because we're just going to enter this period of unbridled, unprecedented levels of crisis all the time, apparently, because they've got a crystal ball, and we need to be able to work directly with government. And that, in other words, we need to bypass the democratic will of the citizenry, because they don't matter anymore. And that's what they're basically telling us. So the Great Reset is basically the starting pistol for the fourth industrial revolution. And that's a hoot, because that's precisely what Agenda 2030 was designed to do. Basically, you're quite right when you say that the climate agenda wasn't happening. It wasn't a fast enough, more serious enough existential threat. It's very hard to say something like, the world's going to end in 30 years. I'm like, yeah, what do you want me to do about it? Or you say something like, okay, then the Extinction Rebellion said, well, it's going to be 12 years. And then we had your one coming out going, how dare you? You know, that whole speech about, you know, Greta Thunberg. But that didn't even work. Well, you know, why? Because, you know, everybody knows that multimillionaires are still buying, you know, beautiful apartments in Miami on the beach, and they don't seem to be.
And they're still jetting around. Yeah, private.
Yeah, banks were still giving 30-year mortgages. So I think the banks would know if there was really an issue, don't you think? So they obviously had to ratchet that up a little bit more. But what was happening is that last year, actually, there was a unification between the UN and the World Economic Forum. And I think what happened was that the globalists sort of realized, okay, this particular international finance capital system is crumbling. This is not going to be profitable for us anymore. And we need somebody who has a vision that will better serve our interests. And they took a look at this Klaus Schwab guy, and they said, he's got some interesting wacky ideas like the fourth industrial revolution. That's one way in which we could use all this Internet of Everything technology to build a sort of prison, and we'll bring in crypto, but it'll be our crypto. We'll get rid of cash, you know, because apparently cash, the virus lives on cash, but doesn't live on newspapers and mainstream media, go figure, you know, but that sort of thing. And, you know, he's got other things like there's a lot of app tracking. There's no privacy, mass surveillance. We'll get vaccines into people. You know, what's his name? Klaus Schwab was very influenced by Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger was a big, you know, so he was a guy who was very much, I mean, he's actually talked about this. I have a clip of Schwab actually saying that very thing. And Kissinger was another guy, a depopulation guy.
Oh, you know? And also, even stuff like he's talked about chips in the, like microchips in your brain, and or rather he's talked about scanning your brain for criminal thoughts, criminal intentions, yes, and stuff like that. Other people have talked about microchips in the brain. I mean, this is very, people I think are skeptical of this because it sounds so extreme, so over the top, and frankly it's like something from science fiction.
It is.
Everything, if you put it all together, it's like we're about to enter the realms of science fiction, and it's not, and not in a nice way. It's going to be a fucking dystopia. And
well, so people, we already are there, Colin. You were there this year. You know, yeah. I'd say if I spoke to you this time, 30th of December, 2019, and I described to you where we'd be like 1 year later, you'd never have believed me. You'd probably have blocked me at this stage.
I'd probably think, Dave, you need to calm down, and I probably would. In fact, I remember saying to you because I was a wee bit concerned, like in April, I actually sent you a message saying, "Be careful with the conspiracy stuff, because it's something that's taking hold," and I was worried that you were getting carried away, which in retrospect seems incredibly patronizing of me, and I'm sorry that I said that.
In the words of Greta Thunberg, how dare you?
I didn't mean it badly. I just thought, is he getting too carried away here? But it turned out that you were completely correct.
I hate to say it, but you know, I've been that guy as well, because I used to think prior to this year, I thought Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 was just cringe conspiracy tinfoil hat stuff as well. But now I realize that the term conspiracy theory is a lot like the term UFO. Now, if someone says, I saw a UFO last night in the sky, they go, oh, so you saw a flying saucer. No, I saw an unidentified flying object, which means I can't identify. I don't know what it was. Could have been anything. Could have been a weather balloon. Could have been a Chinese lantern. Could have been a plane. Could have been a drone. Doesn't matter. Conspiracy theory does not mean crazy crackpot nonsense fiction. It doesn't mean that. It means I have a theory that some people have conspired together to do a thing and to bring about a series of events. And to, you know, this is very interesting. You can get into any taxi in Dublin and you can talk to a taxi driver and you can say, you know, ah, sure, look, you know, the bankers there and the government, they're all in bed with the bankers and they all screw us over, don't they? Yeah, they're all at it. They're all taking backhanders. They're all corrupt. They're all this. They're all screwing over the little guy.
But surely they would never conspire, right?
Surely they'd never do it all together on purpose and coordinate to make that happen. Ah, you're mad. That's literally where we are. That's where we've gone to. We've just gone like one logical step further from that point.
Yeah. So it's actually not that. I mean, indeed, if you've got money and power and connections, as I said to someone else, why wouldn't you use them? Why wouldn't you be conspiring to make the world the way you want it to be? I mean, what else is money and power for if not to influence the world? I mean, once you've got all the material possessions you want, once you've got the nice house that you always dreamed of having, now what? What about the other 99% of your wealth from running Amazon or running Microsoft or whatever?
Oh, yeah, I don't think Bill Gates is like wants to make another 100 billion. Like, once you've had 100 billion, like, what's the point? I think this is the fulfillment of, like, you know, his father's dream, William Gates Sr. He was on the board of Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood was founded by Margaret Sanger, who's a eugenicist and who's someone who wanted to, you know, she believed in sterility. It's sterilizing people if it was necessary. I think that's where that comes from. Is there something I'll actually be talking about eventually is the Jaffe memo. I may have described that to you before, with Frederick Jaffe, who came up with this description of how to... It was essentially a contribution to how... He worked in Planned Parenthood. I think it was the R&D section of Planned Parenthood. And his strategy, it's basically everything that we've seen over the last 40 years of global homo or so. It's all in there. You know, the promotion of... getting women into education, obviously that takes them, and workplace, that reduces their prime fertile years by some degree, so they have less kids. That's number one. So promotion of feminism, promotion of abortion, and promotion of homosexuality for the same purpose.
And I was going to say promotion of LGBT stuff as well. Sorry, I was smiling there while you were saying it, not because I find any of this amusing, but because it occurred to me, you know, your YouTube channel and my YouTube channel are really fucked, aren't they? I mean, given what we're talking about here, you know, it's like, how long can this continue?
not much longer. But look, I on that subject of censorship, like I've now had 11 videos yeeted off. Well, 12 this year, but 11 of them are on the subject of COVID. And like, it's just been one long subject, that the same subject I've been covering the whole year. But I've never been more ready now, actually. It's not gonna affect me too much. I mean, I remember in 2016 talking about the hate speech stuff that the EU wanted to bring in and the collaborations they're doing with all the corporations and big tech. And I was like, oh God, I'm really worried. And I had 100,000 subs at the time. But I got to the end of 2016. And then I got to the end of 2017. And that was the big year of Adpocalypse. And then we got to the end of 2018. So I was like, this is a bonus. This is great. I can't really complain. I'm still going. Got to the end of 2019. Miracle. And the fact that I've now got to the end, more or less, a day to go, to the end of 2020, I'm like, this is fantastic. This is brilliant. You know, I'm ready. I've been building for mines. Gab, get on Gab TV. You know, Odyssey, BitChute, you know, I'll be there, you know, and yeah, the audience will be smaller, it'll be more dedicated, but I'm not going to have to worry about censorship for a while. I know that Ray and BitChute have been sort of forced, their hand has been forced by, a lot of people don't understand this nefarious shit that's been going on there with BitChute, you know, the fact that there's been so much pressure coming from like the Home Office in the UK and, you know, that it's just been wild, but they're still, you know, still one of the best games in town in terms of all tech.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't know the details, but I can easily believe that their hand has been forced in some ways. Okay, so there are a few diamonds that I should go through. This is a D-Life thing before we finish. I'll just go through these diamonds. Has Dave met Keith Woods IRL? They were at a rally.
Yes, I have met Keith Woods IRL at a rally. That did happen. That was the one time I met him, yeah. He's a tall guy. He's actually taller than I thought he was going to be.
Right. Okay. Thank you for an excellent millennial. All the best for 2021. Oh, thank you very much, Vigilante Jesus. It's nice to see you here. I know you from YouTube, so it's nice to see you on DLive. Wesley Paul says, beards are looking real nice, fellas. Thank you very much. I think anyone would have to agree that Dave's beard is more much fuller and more impressive than mine. This is a very amateur effort. Okay. Ask about the funded hospital, the funding hospitals got for COVID. I don't know if there's anything, something you want to say about that, the funding that hospitals got for COVID.
Well, I suppose you'd have to break down where. I'm sure they did. But there's been so many layoffs of like nursing staff in the UK as well and in the United States.
This gets us to the whole weird thing with the TikTok dance routines, the Nightingale hospitals that were never used, the claims that hospitals are overwhelmed when apparently everyone who goes to visit hospitals for whatever reason reports that they're deserted.
That's the Orwellian thing, isn't it? The idea that you can have, you know, how many fingers am I holding up, Winston? You know, is it four? Is it five?
Yeah.
It's the idea that you're supposed to look at this, see that clearly hospital after hospital is either empty or filled with these elaborate dancing nurses. And obviously their dance routines are so elaborate, they must have been practicing them for a long time and nothing else to do. And it's designed to make you go, yeah, you know, on one side, the media tells you that's the gaslighting, right? But it's also this idea of just do what you're told. And that's the test.
And believe
it very well.
And believe as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Go along with it. I mean, I can understand some people say, well, the hospitals are deserted, but the ICU, the intensive care units are not deserted. They are overwhelmed, and that's the point. But again, then in that case, why are the nurses doing dance routines? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's weird. And also, even if you had the time to do dance routines, is that right? Is that good taste?
Would it be good optics?
Yeah, exactly. It's just perverse. I don't understand it, except it's some sort of weird, confuse them idea. I really don't know what else is going on there. And as for it, well, that's another thing. The NHS banging the pots at 8 p.m. on I think it was a Tuesday night. What the fuck? That became a thing in itself, this love of the NHS. Like, we've got to support our NHS. We've got to make sure that our NHS doesn't get overwhelmed. Quasi-religious.
Clap the regime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they even, for a while there, while that was happening, was it ITV? One of the channels in the UK would turn off. It'd switch off so you could go outside and bash pots and pans.
I'd never heard of that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah. That was happening. In other words, you know, television's off during worship.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Okay, have you heard Ian Brown's anti-lockdown tune, Little Seed?
I love it. And actually, because I haven't been going out because the pubs are closed, you know, my friend loves that. We watch a few these videos, and we have a few beers sometimes, the odd time he comes up, and he loves that song. So, yeah, I'm glad Ian Brown's on. Who else? Right Said Fred, Jim Corr,
yeah.
Eric Clapton.
Jim Corr just
got Morrison. Yeah.
Jim Corr just got banned from Twitter.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm imagining it was for stuff like related to this. That was a Ninja Genie someone donated. Thank you very much. Layson Thorne says, who's Eki Lux, says, love your stuff, Dave. Cheers from America.
Thank you.
That's nice. Someone donates a Ninja Genie. Thank you very much. And says, Mr. Valance, you can read the literature, and so you must know asymptomatic transmission isn't a thing. Oh, this, yes, yes, indeed. All right. When will, okay, there are stuff about other matters that I don't want to bring up just now, but thank you for the diamonds, but I'm not going to go into these other matters. And someone says, thanks for saying the US election was fraudulent. Yeah, it obviously was. Okay, someone donates a Ninjagini and says, we must worship science, and smart scientists say that humans have only diverged physically. Yes, okay, that's another matter. Just trust the scientists and obey. All right, thank you very much. And then someone says, when life hands you lemons, give them to Woes. Thank you very much. And then Shoddy Dan says, great to see Dave on here finally. Happy New Year. So people are very happy to see you on Millennial, Dave, and so am I.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, well, yeah, after everything we've said, it's an ironic thing to say, but you have also said that you think ultimately our side, as it were, will win. Would you like to end on that sort of optimistic note?
Well, first of all, whether you're a football team, you know, you can't go out believing we're going to lose or something. Before the game, you have to believe you're going to win. But it is important for people to believe that. And look, the truth is still on our side. There's still time. I think there is going to be a massive economic depression. There's no denying that. The damage is done in that regard. But I think the scaffolding of the new world order is going up. I don't think the entire thing will be complete. There's too many spinning plates involved. And you know, there's something of the sort of ebb and flow of psychic energy of humanity. We are very seasonal beings and we're driven by the seasons. And I think that right now it's sort of easy to be sort of black-pilled and dark about it all. And there's a lot to be, and look, there's a battle ahead, and it's not just going to be 2021. I got to break it to you. You're going to have to endure quite a lot of this, and it's going to test your stamina and your resolve. But I think by the spring, we'll see, you know, the trees are starting to, you know, bud and bloom and everything. And I think that, you know, the evenings are a little bit longer. And I think there'll be a new energy. You know, there's not going to be some great awakening like we all want. People aren't going to suddenly take off the masks and just sort of wake up from it. The damage is, there's a lot, as you know, Woes, is like, this is deep-seated now with this programming in a lot of people. It's going to take a long time to break that spell. But I think it'll get easier to dissent bit by bit, and that's something to build on. So it's important to keep the protests going. They've sort of died a little bit in Ireland and the UK, where our numbers were good during the summer. So I'm looking forward to a new energy. This is sort of our hibernation period, I suppose. But I think we'll come back stronger in March, April, because they have to ratchet up. Right? This is something that even their behavioral science teams don't truly understand. They're betting everything on the uptake of the vaccine. And if they're off by even a small margin, there's a window there. There's an opportunity for us. So we have to build on that. We have to build on the fact that the public are starting. We'll go, hold on, I'm not taking a risk with my health with this. What's in that? Sorry. You've given indemnity to the vaccine companies for any damage. Sorry. What's
that's a massive, that should be a huge giveaway. Yes. That, sure.
Yes, I suspect it will be. And I think we've got to build on that. But we've got to build back better in 2021 in our own way. Let's create our own new world order and our own paradigm. And grow vegetables if you can.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks very much. There's obviously so much more that we could have said, but we've only got a limited amount of time and James Alsop is waiting. So, Dave Cullen, thank you so much for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Thank you for having me. Take care, guys.
Excellent. People have loved it. So I'm really glad we did this. Okay. I'll be back imminently with James Alsop. In the meantime, thank you for watching this. Sorry it was on DLive only, but I think given the content, you can understand why we made that decision. Okay, see you later.